Crosby.
Yeah.
What are you doing, bud?
I was just looking at the battle raging on with light beer manufacturers.
It's a big one out there, bud. Big.
That's what I was doing.
It's a big brouhaha.
It is.
Play on words.
Jokingly, but we were talking about, what did I just talk about? We had a brief conversation about how I paid $11 for a can of Coors Light in an event last week.
Coors Light.
Coors Light.
That's water and goat piss, isn't it?
$11 for a regular size can of beer. That's how out of control
Binomics
the world is. $11.
Thank you.
Anyway, yeah.
Well, welcome back into the podcast room.
Here I am.
Here you are. It's been a while for you. We were in here last week. You missed an awesome podcast.
What'd you talk about?
Horses, wild horses in the state of Nevada, in the western state, actually. In the, you need to go back and listen to it if you haven't yet. But it's
absolutely, is it out?
No, it should be out tonight or tomorrow. It's.
I saw your research materials and I almost threw up in my mouth.
Yeah, it is. But there is. We have Uncle Mel back in the old podcast room with us too. Well,
he's
back.
Looking good too. How got haircut, you, beard trim,
all trimmed up, ready to roll.
Back on another Where the Pavement Ends podcast. This week it's brought to you by Vortex Optics. They are an awesome partner of ours, and they support everything that we're doing, not just in the hunting world, but they back up everything that we're about, as well as conservation and everything, getting behind hunters and fishermen. And so
everybody loves when Uncle Mel's on the show.
They do. They love
That voice.
I love being here. I mean, you got to straighten these youngsters out.
I know.
That's right.
Hey, I want to give you guys an update. Yeah, I was just going to say, he's going to give us an update on, you'll be hearing, obviously, this after what I just talked about with Crosby at the horses. This is an update a little bit that's happened within the last week on that.
So what we got is the appropriators cut $5.9 million from the Bureau's Wild Horse and Burro Program budget to 141.9.
They cut it? Is that what you're saying?
They cut it 5.9. Now, this is the appropriator, so, you know, the agencies put in their money. The Biden administration put in what they wanted.
Yeah,
the Biden administration was actually asking for $154.7 million for the 224 budget proposal. So when you look at 141.9, that's $12.8 billion dollar difference. And what that's going to mean is that the planned roundups are in jeopardy.
Yeah, not going to happen.
It's, you know, we all love to see cuts, and I'd love to see more, but that's probably one program where we need to get this under control. We need to get the population.
Yeah, you miss
that. I don't want to rehash what you guys talked about last week, but what briefly, what do they use that money for?
Feeding.
Which money?
The money you just said. They want X number of dollars. I don't remember what figure you just gave.
Okay, so first of all, they go out to a contractor, and they have the roundups, okay? Then these horses are usually hauled about 35 at a time by trucks to a holding pen, and a short-term holding pen. So you have the cost of the capture team. Now you have the cost of the transportation team. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, it's in short-term holding, the cost per day per horse can be more than $13 per day. So you're looking, I think the average was around 642, or, you know, somewhere around $6. Okay. That's per head per day.
And
so you have 70,000 horses in long-term and short-term holding. Now, in long-term, which are the pastures back in the Midwest, for the most part, those holdings can go as high as $4 to $5, $6 also per day. So
right there, just on feeding on an average of six for the 70,000 horses, $153.3 million.
Well, and that is... That is the majority of the BLM's budget.
But what are we doing? Why? Why? Why?
You should have been here last week.
I know, but that's what I don't understand. So I don't understand is, I understand that there's people in the world that like to look at those horses. But do they know the difference of looking at 100 horses versus looking at 50 horses? Like, why can't we just thin that herd? The fact that I want to bring up,
it's a great.
You showed
question.
Me a piece of paper that said that Nevada's holding 44,000 wild horses and 5,000 burros right now, or that was last year.
No, you're right. We have 44,000 feral horses on the range, and we have 5,000 burros.
So
that's just on the range.
Yeah, that's not okay? captivity.
That's not in captivity.
Right, but what I'm And we're supposed to have 12,000 or something, you told me?
We're supposed to have 12,000.
Is it that bad to thin that? Would it hurt those people's feelings that bad to say, look, we could save our country $153 million, whatever, I'm just using Clay's figure for the feeding.
Part of that, yeah.
But let's dwindle them down. Let's take them back down to, let's have our 12,000 that we're supposed to have.
Yeah, that would be great. And that's what sportsmen... And that's what we want, okay? But you hear the same things over and over and over again, that the reason why they don't want you to go out and capture these horses. But here's the deal. The 1971 Free-Roaming Wild Horse and Burro Act is the greatest act that was ever written. It's 8 pages. And what Congress has never appropriated for is what it says in the act, and that is the undesirables, something to this effect, but they will be destroyed.
Yeah,
get killed. So they will be euthanized. Congress has never appropriated funds for that. So the BLM is, and then it was amended a couple times more, the Burns Act, of which our great leader, Harry Reid, was actually the one, if you know the history and stuff, he's the one who actually did it, but Burns brought it because he's from Montana. So anyhow, they wrote it and it was amended, and that's when we brought in these holding areas. It was never in the act to do what was being done until it was amended. You were supposed to get, you're supposed to destroy those extra horses. Now we have 10-year-olds that are undesirable, and they're out there in these long-term holding pens, costed millions.
No one
millions
wants to adopt
dollars.
Them. No one does anything.
But aren't they all undesirable? Who wants a wild horse?
No. I mean, actually, if the BLM, and I haven't felt this way like I do now. Just for the last couple of years, I really got to know what the BLM was trying to do, what they were trying to accomplish. It was always, I'm cussing the BLM because we have them out there. They're fighting to get them into AML2, that's the law. They have to be there. They have to be in that AML
appropriate
low
management
high.
Levels.
Let me give you one quick, for instance. Okay, the BLM just got through capturing, the last capture they did here in Nevada was at the East Pershing, okay, which is what you would know it at as 182 and 045. Okay, all the way to the Winnemucca, where you're looking at the East Range, Humboldt's, that place, okay? But it's, so the low AML, now this is, I'm sure these are the numbers, but you could check me, but I'm pretty sure I'm dead on. 345 is the low AML, appropriate management level. The high is 555. Okay, so the BLM wants to should have to keep them, and that's what they've guaranteed the state of Nevada. They're supposed to be in there. That's the reason why the state of Nevada has to sue. So between 335 and 555, Alex, they rounded up 2,700 plus.
That's what,
and we're still over high AML.
That's the thing. So we can rehash this all day long, but yeah. the point of the act is they're supposed to kill them. But again, you have to go through the administration, and the Congress holds, right? The House holds the purse strings. So if you can't give the government money to go kill them, they ain't getting killed.
Well, we could do it for free.
Yes. So, but now we have to, we talked about it this year, this last podcast. We as sportsmen, state of Nevada, are injured from these horses, and there's going to be lawsuits brought. That's the only way it's going to be fixed, is through lawsuits, because the government's never going to change.
But does it boil down to simply that there's a group of people that love these horses so much they can't imagine the sight of them, thought of them being killed, even if it's just to correct their numbers?
Well, not even that. It's that, but they don't see the death and destruction that being overpopulated.
I understand, but that's what it boils, because logically, I cannot see how we look at that and go, even just from the monetary level of it, you're willing to spend that much of our taxpayer money to manage this thing that is so overpopulated, and it's simply held up because people are fighting against them being killed.
But they've been led astray by these feral horse groups, yeah, the advocates, so much that the problem is it's the livestock on the range, okay? It's the cattle, it's the sheep. Yeah. That's the problem. Horses don't do the damage. You know, that's what they've been led to believe. And then you have, you know, we're going to call them Hollywood horses. So they have a really good-looking stallion or a really good-looking mare or an offspring that's out of a certain herd. And they make him...
Turn that off, please.
They make him a, you know, an automatic...
poster child.
Well, yeah, exactly. And they pull at the heartstrings of people. Money is donated. Big, big money. And it doesn't go on the ground.
It just goes to the cause.
It lines their pockets. They're not trying to help the horse.
Nobody adopts these horses, so, right?
Very few.
They do. And we just had a sale. It's a great sale down at the Carson City.
But not enough to put a dent in.
No.
I was going to ask you, what was the number? How many sold? 10, 20?
I think there was, yeah, exactly. And the highest one went for $13,000.
And what do you do with that horse?
After a year, you have title to it.
But what can you do with a wild
horse?
These
horses are taken to the medium security prison. They're broke, they're ridden, and they're just like any other horse you'd have in the
You got to think that most horses out on the range anymore aren't purebred stallions. A lot of them are,
people go turn their horses loose that they can't afford anymore.
Before we move on to today's subject, yeah, the last thing, and this might not be the best analogy, but you take a child molester, and there's 100,000 of them. You say, by your point of view, let's just kill 80,000 of them, and there'll only be 20,000 left. We can manage that. Me and Joel's perspective on the wild horse is there's however many child molesters, kill them all. You have to take it to that extreme to get back to even remotely close to being able to manage them, because every 2 to 4 years, they double. So you have to be able to have the saying, no, we're putting a stop to this, because it's just like trapping. If you give them a little bit, hey, we'll keep it at the low AMLs. No, because there's always going to be that person that says, no, we're going to just let them be free ranging there, whatever.
I think when you say the word child molester, there's no argument that could be had with you.
That's why I said it's a wrong thing.
Said it might be bad.
Yeah. Whatever it is, there's something out there that you can say, okay, well, we can manage if there's only 500 of them on the street or whatever you're trying to bring up. No, to get rid of a problem, you have to get rid of the problem.
Yeah. And I think maybe a better analogy would be this. And this is what Joel's saying. If you're on a teeter-totter, you want to be clear at the other end to equal things out. What we're doing, the way we're doing this now, is we're starting in the middle. And they've got the weight. They've got the support on the teeter-totter, which is true. What we really want, we have to get extreme so that we can get to the middle, is what I think Clay is really trying to say and what Joel's really trying to say. We have to start out there. We have to get just as extreme as they are. They don't want anybody. They don't want any horse removed.
Yeah.
They would rather remove the cattle. And they claim it. You know, they claim that there's 400,000 head of, more than 400 head of cattle on the range. There's 222,000 beef cows in the state of Nevada, and not all of that cattle is on the open range. Okay, 222,000. I can show you these statistics for every state. So if we have 222,000 beef cattle in the whole state of Nevada. How can we have 440 some thousand head of cattle on the open range? It just this math, but people buy into this. They believe it. They give to the cause, and they think they're doing something.
And but social media.
They're just lining the pockets of the attorneys so that they can go sue the BLM, and it's really not the BLM's fault. You better start suing the federal government if you want to go somewhere.
But and which I didn't know about this real quick. The BLM is only one entity that takes care of wild horses.
Well, the U.S. Forest
Service. There's U.S. Forest Service. There's the state takes control of some that are on state land. So BLM gets a bad rap. BLM is doing its job, but there's other entities involved. That's beside the point, but you should listen to the podcast. It's good. It's going to be good. But,
it should be educational.
Today, Uncle Mel wanted to talk about something that's very pressing, and we need to do it because tag applications are coming up real quick. People are going to start being putting in for tags here in Nevada, correct? So last year, this is the first year that this is going to
this
be.
This is the first year.
So last year it happened, they changed the NRS code to what we're going to talk about today. Previously, the $3 fee, it went to an exact thing, and you didn't have an option. So now
you had an option to participate or not to participate, correct? Or no?
No, you never.
No matter what, $3
fee is
coming out.
Fee, yes,
you're paying the $3 fee.
But now they've changed this to the old thing used to say: existing law provides that in addition to any fee charged and collected for a game tag, a fee of $3 must be charged for processing each application for a game tag. That revenue from which must be deposited with the state treasurer for credit to the wildlife account in the state general fund and used by the Department of Wildlife for costs related to certain programs and activities, including without limitation, wildlife management activities relating to the protection of non-predatory game animals and sensitive wildlife species and conducting research related to managing and controlling predatory wildlife. I want to say, to kind of combine it to last week's conversation, we should somehow get horses redesignated as predators so we can shoot them.
Oh, okay. So some of your, there's a lot of, like, I believe what you're talking like is a mountain lion or something like that. Bobcat,
yeah.
Whatever. Okay. So there are states that have two listings, dual listings. The Alaska has it. Wyoming has it. So in this time of the year, and in these places, it is a game animal, okay? A wolf in Wyoming. At other times, outside of these areas, they're vermin.
Yeah.
They're a predator. Mm-hmm. You know, they're vermin. You can take them any time. So there are states that have dual classifications.
That was kind of off the top. But now with this new law, this Assembly Bill, I think it was 70, that came up to change the NRS code, it is amended to read as the following. In addition to that to any fee collected, the $3 must be charged for processing each application for a game tag, the revenue which will go into that same account, at the direction of the applicant. So now there's a choice, and the costs go to developing and implementing an annual program for the lethal removal of predatory wildlife, or developing...
So here... Go ahead.
Yeah, or developing and implementing an annual program for the improvement of wildlife habitat and research or management activities beneficial to non-predatory game species.
So either you're giving your $3 to lethal predator control, or you're giving your $3 to research of game animals.
Or habitat.
Yeah, right. Sure.
So it's going to read...
So both those things are going to happen. Basically, there's going to be two buckets that are going to get filled up, right? You're either going to
hopefully with this podcast, we educate some people, and hopefully there's very little going to the other bucket. That's how important this is.
We want the $3 going to lethal means take. To get rid
it
of
used
predatory
to be, It was amended by Gogucci a couple legislatures ago. It's been a few now, but it... The department wasn't spending the money correctly in the legislator's eyes. So he made it where it was 80% mandatory that it would be lethal. But part of that 80% could be used for research to see if what was happening was actually benefiting. Now, us on this side of the table, we're saying it does work. Other people say, no, it doesn't look, doesn't work. You know, we've killed a lot of coyotes, we've killed a lot of mountain lions, we have no other deer. Well, in my opinion, we haven't killed enough. Period. That's just the way it is. That's the way I feel, and I have studies that prove what I'm saying that way. But real quick, right off the top of your head, give me an example of a non-predatory animal. Clay, give me a non-predatory animal.
Non-game either, or just non-predatory?
Give me a non-predatory animal.
Mule deer.
No, mule deer probably go
out
and
kill. Predator, but they're already protected. But go ahead. Yeah. I mean, give me one. It's really, I mean, the reason why I'm pulled, can you give me one, Alex? Right off the top of your head.
I was going to say mule deer.
Okay. So now, how about a fish? Is a fish a predatory
yes.
animal?
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's
Is
why
a frog?
Yes.
Absolutely. A snake, a lizard, a mink?
Yeah.
They all are. And a lot of people say, we'll tell you that hunt chucker, even a chucker is.
They're
cannibalistic. Yeah. They eat each other.
That's why I was having a hard time coming up with something.
So
I would think even mule deer probably even kill stuff in times of need.
I don't know if they eat them. Now, I know elk have been, you know, that's on camera with elk eating sage grouse eggs in two different states, Wyoming and Washington and Colorado. That, you know, they have them on film. It's a big... So I wouldn't classify them as one, but you have to classify a frog as that's the way they live. So what is a non-predatory animal? I mean, we don't have many of them.
Yep.
Eagles, you know, and the rest of them, the ducks, the geese, the chucker, the quail, you know, we are protecting them. There's no doubt with the $3 fee, especially the sage grouse. Now let's just take a look at a sage grouse and a chucker. Can you say that they're sometimes predatory because they eat bugs?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I see, let's get definitive on this stuff. What is it you really want to do? So I just wanted to put that out on the table.
Let me ask you, it's the big three that we're talking about when we're talking about predators, right? You're talking about coyotes, bobcats, and mountain lions. I mean, do you throw foxes and skunks and
bears?
Bears? Do you when you think about that, when you're thinking about protecting our you know, mule deer herds and our elk herds and stuff, we're talking about the big three. I mean,
only
that's
two.
Well, really, we're talking about coyotes and mountain lions.
Coyotes.
Yeah. So why don't we just say that too? lethal control of coyotes and mountain lions. I mean, yeah. You know,
You know, like an eagle, there's no question an eagle is a predator.
Sure.
Okay. Now, the Obama administration gave permission to the wind generators, okay, using towers, to kill up to 4,300 eagles a year and not be prosecuted. Mm-hmm.
And what are those solar farms? The solar farms are melting them too.
Exactly. I mean, especially the one down by Tonopah. I mean, it had a 25% startup. And most of them were ducks that got fried. But when they turn all those to the mirror and the bird flies through it, they call them floaters. They're dead. They're gone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's immensely hot. They're fried.
It vaporizes them, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they could identify a bunch of them, but the majority of them are migratory birds. So, honestly, people say, well, there's nothing we can do about the eagles, you know, the raptors. But hold on a second. If they really are a big problem with sage grouse, which hawks are, you know, I've counted leks for a long, long time, and I see what happens to a lek when, you know, sage grouse when a hawk flies over an eagle. You know, they're gone. Mm-hmm. But the strut's over, guys. We're done. I mean, we're out of here. So why is it that we're so afraid to say, look, we have to manage some of these too? You know, it might be, you know, I might be far-fetching something. I don't think I am, but there is a big problem with these things that are federally protected.
Well, and that's what
especially with the sage grouse that they want to list.
Hey, I'm with you. I feel the same way. The horses, nothing has the infinite right to roam the earth. I mean, I guess as a human being, you are, but all those animals.
I mean, you know, they do. I mean,
what does?
I do. I really feel that that they have their place. I mean, there's no doubt.
They have, I'm not saying total decimation, but I mean, like you say, if all of a sudden we're fighting, we've been fighting for these sage grouse forever, and the golden eagle is deemed its number one predator, and they're decimating that, we're never going to do anything about that? We're going to let them win that fight? You know what I mean?
The raven is protected also, but we kill a lot of ravens in this state every year for sage grouse protection.
Right.
Now, are we gaining any? That's to be debated. You know, that's the question. It's like the second part of that question. You know, I'm going to go ahead and get into it now. I mean, I've done a lot of habitat work in my life, as you guys know. I've done a lot.
You're the guzzler king.
And plantings and all kinds of things. But there's not a project other than a guzzler. But for mule deer, no. I'm going to talk about mule deer. There's not a project that I or anyone I've talked to can point to that's put one more damn deer on the ground in the state of Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, as a conservationist and one that believes in habitat, it's tough to say. But you know what? It's like the book of Tough Love. You got to say what's true. You got to give the facts out there. And that is a fact, guys. We had 250,000 deer, 244, 250, 288, some people say on the high side, in 1988. We had 68,000 last year, and there's a lot less this year.
Yep.
We're going to be floored when we have another podcast and we start talking about tag opportunities. There's not going to be many. So we really need to do something. And there's a lot of misinformed folks out there that think that managing predators won't bring more mule deer. They won't bring more sheep. Well, it's a policy that we're going to transplant sheep. We're going to go in there. We're going to take out the predators first, namely mountain lions. Okay, that's in policy. And I'm telling you now, it's going to get reinforced here real quick. That policy will be reinforced. If you look at the sheep release, I know I said I'm going to talk about mule deer, but I want to give some examples on some things that I know about that's happened in my lifetime. We took a bunch of sheep, captured them out of 212, and we put them into more or less an enclosure. You know, we enclosed them, but we put them behind fences in the Wasucks, which is right by Walker Lake. Okay, now the last sheep was eaten, just like the rest of them, by a lion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we know that for a fact. One day, I commented on a guzzler on Facebook, and lo and behold, I get a PM from a guy, you know, or whatever you call those, on Messenger, and he said, "Great comment." He put it on there too, but he also PM'd me and said, "Hey," so I didn't know who this guy was. Well, it turns out he passed away here a few years ago, and I still on Facebook, you know, say, "Hey, rest in peace, buddy." But he was the biologist in Texas that when we brought the sheep there, we traded some turkeys for him, if you remember the stories. But he told me, he says, "I think it was the last 100. But he says, "I could guarantee you the last 25 sheep that were in this mountain range where I'm going to put the sheep from, where I put the sheep from Nevada, every one of them were killed by a mountain lion. All the last 25. But he says, "I can almost guarantee you the last 100 went that way." So what we're talking about is when numbers get real low, okay, of deer, antelope, sheep, whatever we're talking about, that's when predators are the most vulnerable to them. If we're blowing habitat, I mean, we're doing good, and we're dropping 65, 70 fawns per 100 does, and 50, 60 lambs, 70 lambs per 100 does, maybe we could take a look at that predator situation a little different. But we're not there, guys. Where we're at is at maintenance levels or below. So when we're talking 22, 23, we're not talking a maintenance level to keep the population the same. We're talking a declining population. We need to be in those 30s, 35s to have a sustaining population. We want to grow them. We got to get those numbers I was mentioning before, 50, 60, 70, you know, of these animals per 100 does. We need to be there. And the only way we're going to get it there now, if we can, is by removing predators. It's just a given.
So you're saying that is going to have more effect than getting rid of horses, better habitat, better management of the lands, more money put into water resource management?
Great question. I want to answer it because, no, I'm not saying that. There's no question habitat is very important.
Yeah.
And I'll get into some habitat stuff here, you know, of what I know. But what I'm saying is when numbers get to where they're at, like the places you love, the Granites, 011, 12, 13, we're not talking about that many animals. Now, I'm not going to put the numbers out here, but I'm going to tell you that there's been several lions taken off the Granites, okay, just in the past year.
Yeah, more than several.
Hopefully it helped. Now, a buddy of mine that has a ranch, he did only have one single deer on his ranch, on his alfalfa field, last year. This year he had, I believe, 30? So hopefully it is helping, okay? What I'm saying is, it's all very important. And in some places, habitat is the most important. But it doesn't beat out the predator management by much. A lot of places, predator management is what we need to be doing.
It's multi.
You spend a lot of time. I know both of you do, but Clay, I think you spend, you know, a lot of time. You spent time with me and your dad, and we look for different things, okay? What do you think the habitat is? The last time you were in 014, what do you think that habitat looked like?
The moon.
Really? So well, you haven't been there for a while.
Certain parts, like there's some parts up there that are flourishing.
Flourishing.
Yeah. I mean, the grasses.
So when you say the moon, you know, what particular areas in 014 are you referring to? Lower stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
But there are, I've been up to places that the water and the trees and the grasses are.
Well, down at some of those, yeah, the sagebrush is 8 feet high. It's
incredible. Yeah. It's incredible.
Now, you were in 011 a couple of years ago with your brother, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What was the habitat like where you hunted that buck, where he harvested that buck? What was it like?
It was good. A lot of horses. A lot of horses.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're there.
What did the brush look like? Did you see?
No, the brush looked good. Yeah, no.
Did you see any new leaders growing up off the top? You know, I mean, the shoots coming up off the top. Did you see that kind of stuff?
Yeah. No, it was nice.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. So, I mean, that's why I'm saying in some places, habitat's number one. In a lot of places,
the habitat's looking pretty good.
Because, you know, it looks good, but there's just not enough animals out there to sustain that many lions that are feeding on them. And Kyle,
you know, it's funny because where we got that deer, he was the only one we saw, and he in a very good area, but there was just tons of horses.
Yeah,
I mean, and
the
so
only deer.
Correlate how you want to correlate that area, what used to have a bunch of mule deer in it, now had one mule deer in it and had a shit ton of horses.
And I think that is the horse management goes twofold. It goes from them pushing out the native wildlife, deer and antelope and all that from water sources, because they run them off like crazy because they're very, very needy with how much water they have, and they decimate the freaking land.
Oh, yeah.
And so not only that, they hold the lions.
Yeah,
they hold the lions.
So,
you know, there.
I think,
and then opportunistic, they're gonna grab a deer when they can, because it's a lot easier to grab a deer than it is a horse.
I think we need to put more money in trying to figure out how to get rid of the horses versus putting money into habitat, because by doing the horses, the habitat is going to be able to come back quicker than
exactly.
So that's twofold operation. The deer are going to manage. They'll eventually die of starvation if they are in a bad area, but you can't come back from getting eaten.
Right. Let me throw this out there, because I saw it yesterday, the day before. Trevor Marks put on his Instagram that, you know, here's a graph of youth tags and how the youth don't want to continue to hunt, and his because he's saying the same thing. There's no deer out here, and there's too many tags. So he's going the other way.
Yep.
And he's a sportsman, and somebody on his said, it's the lions, it's the coyote. He says, I kill tons of lions. Mm-hmm. It's the tags.
Right.
And
it's true. It's true. In the eastern part of the state, there are a lot of lion hunters, and sometimes they have pretty tough times, getting them. The thing is, when it's snow, we're gonna grab them. We're gonna find them.
Yeah,
it makes it so much easier. But it's a problem. Sport harvest is never gonna take care of it ever.
You can't put a dent in them.
No, you're not going to.
Have we ever? I was gonna ask you. When you draw or buy a mountain lion tag in Nevada, you check the quota. If the quota's not met, you're okay to hunt. Have we ever met that quota?
Never.
To your knowledge?
Never.
And what is it, 2,000 a year?
Well, it's per unit.
But what is it for the state?
230-something.
For the state?
Yeah.
We never even killed 237?
No, we don't.
And the funny thing is, if it harvests.
I thought it was 2,000.
I don't
know. No, I'm not saying I knew that. I'm just in my mind.
I don't know the numbers either, but No. Whatever, not funny thing, but the crazy thing, let's say you did meet the 236 or 2,000, whatever it is. The next day, I think it goes to July 1st, maybe June 30th, and then July 1st, the quotas they start again. So if you killed everyone and you killed like the last one, the 237th on the last day of the year,
right,
on June 30th, I think it goes to June 30th. That's how they count. I think that's the year that they go by. July 1st, guess what? The quotas go right back to the original set. You can kill another 237 or 2,000, whatever the quota is.
The reason why it's not that many, Alex, is that the Department of Wildlife puts a population of mountain lions in the state.
250, you're right.
3,500. So we would never kill 80% of any animal, And they're a game animal.
Do you think that if more sportsmen got involved in a mountain lion hunt, it would help? I know it would help. Would it make a noticeable impact? If we came out today and said, hey, we want you to put in for points only in mule deer in Nevada, and we want everyone to buy a lion tag, and we want everyone to kill until the quota's finished, would it help? Would it put a noticeable...
If you concentrated in certain areas, yes, it would.
How about
especially
this?
In years like we have now.
This is a
wet years.
Very off the top, haven't even put any thought into it, because right when you were saying that, sparked in my mind. It is a game animal. $26 for the tag.
Mm-hmm.
Why not remove that? Because if you can show that you can get more deer on the ground by killing these animals, you're going to make more money in tag applications, because there'll be more hunters being able to do that, and the state giving more money, getting more money from the tags. Why not make them a non-game animal and get rid of the is the $26 holding people back from hunting them, or what's holding people back from hunting them? Because in my mind, hunters would love to go kill a why not?
So what is holding hard them back?
Or is it too expensive to go?
I was going to say, you have to get hounds.
You've answered your question, Clay. $6,500. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what it's about minimum what you're going
to pay to
get
go kill
charge
one. Yeah.
To go take a lion with a hound. Okay. Now, how many lions do you want? Most of us are one and done.
Yep.
Right.
If you pay that kind of money,
especially. Yeah. So I mean, we all try to call them. We there's lots of things we like to do, but I mean, that's very expensive. And for the average Joe, the average hunter, the vast majority of them, $6,500 is a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
And $6,500 is cheap, but it's a 7-day hunt. Hey, you get one, you don't, and I think a lot of guys are one and done. They're satisfied when they got that one.
You can actually have
two tags in the state of Nevada.
Yeah,
to be fair,
two tags.
We can have two tags, but I think the biggest cost is the hounds, the dogs.
And not the cost of the tag. So, poor success without dogs, and then paying the fee. Because I buy a tag every year just to have it in my pocket. You're going to call them in when you're coyote hunting.
Mm-hmm.
We never, yeah. we very rarely specifically target mountain lions, but and you know you just never see them.
But you rarely see them. You made the comment of once you're one and done, you kind of it is what it is. But is that like because they're put on a platter, you know, an echelon of a game animal, like they're so unique that you're not going to see them all the time. You're not going to kill them all the time because they're not like coyotes. You can't call them in all the time. In my mind, if I was to be able to afford them two a year in the state or more, if they took the $26 off, I would go as many as I could afford if the cost would stay the same. If you could afford more, I would go kill as many as I could, because not only they're not like put on a pedestal on for me, they're awesome. I love hunting them, but it's more about the dog work than killing the animal. And I think in my mind, I would want to kill as many as I could to help out the deer population
or any population.
Any population.
If so what? So what would make that change for you currently?
Cost,
probably. The cost of going. So yeah. That's what I'm. But yeah, so yeah. It's not the $26.
Not the $26.
But if it's not like you said, it's like I'm one and done. People wouldn't want to go kill another one. My answer to that is I would, if I could afford them, I would kill as many as I could, just like coyotes.
And a lot of people probably would.
Yeah.
You know, hey, we're all, you know, governed by the mighty dollar. So
you know, there's guys that have dogs, and I don't know the legalities of this or whatever, and there's not a lot of them, but I do know a couple. They have dogs, and they're houndsmen for... That's what they enjoy to do.
For themselves, yeah.
Yeah.
And their family.
Yeah.
And friends.
And would take you.
And they take no money.
So why don't
that's
we...
That's what I'm saying
very,
is...
They're very, very few.
Very, very few. But it would be cool if they're... Number one, there were more. And they would say, hey, I got my two tags. I got the friends that I liked. How about let's take some random folks out? You want to fill a tag? I want to run my dogs.
So either... The only way you do that is a lot of them probably aren't millionaires and can afford. There's a bunch of gas. There's a bunch of everything, feeding the dogs, everything taking care of them.
And the dog costs. So
what about raising funds to offset those costs for people? Why not start some type of pack or whatever you want to call it to try to get donations for that exact purpose? Not pay full price for something. Have a you know, X amount of outfitters that are willing to take a cut on a price and not charge my, you know, 501(c) kind of deal, charge me only $2,000 so we can take out four kids or people instead of only one. Cut me a price on your deal, just basically cover your cost.
That would be legal.
Yeah.
With a registered guide.
Yeah, with a registered
guide. Okay, but... A master guide, but it wouldn't be legal. It would be against the law, which myself and Larry Johnson fought very, very hard to not put this in there. That, you know, we didn't want this
to get paid if you're not registered.
Yeah. Right. If you're not a guide, they can't pay you legally speaking. I'm not saying they would ever do it, but let's just say Alex draws a tag, okay, and I say I'm going to help you.
And you're a guide or no guide?
No, I'm not a guide. Okay. Just me, myself. Okay. I'm going to do this myself.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say, Alex, I'm going to help you. I'll see you at camp. Okay? So Alex goes over and he throws 5 gallons of diesel in my truck and he buys me a steak. And then legally, to the T, that's illegal. I and him can both get in trouble for that. I cannot accept any money, anything of value. And we fought this hard, and we tried with Dave Bobzien. It was his bill, and we tried. He was assemblyman, and we tried to get some language to where the guys like myself and Larry, and there's just a lot of guys that do this, well, we're protected. You know, just because we eat somebody's food out of their tent and we're helping them, we're not a guide, and we're not getting paid anything.
No.
So that we try to fight it, but you know what? The law is the law. And to the T, you know, they could take it to that.
So if I know you're a really good sheep hunter, and I say, hey, Uncle Mel, I've drawn a sheep tag. Can you come down here and help me, and I fill up your gas tank? technically?
That's technically, to the T of the law, so that is against the law.
Because it's a game animal?
No, it's because I'm guiding without a license. I'm accepting monetary value.
I knew that was a deal in, like, Idaho. You have to be a guide to, like, go duck hunting, or you can't be a guide, or maybe you have to be a resident. There was something to that. But I thought Nevada you could do because
the next one we talk about, I'll bring you this NRF. Yeah, it was just, it's been law for,
so you're saying anybody that goes out with somebody coyote hunting and they say, oh, hell, I'm going to buy lunch because you drove? If I took Joe Schmo coyote hunting and we went to Bruno's and I was like, hey, we met at McDonald's on I-80. I say, no, jump in my truck. We're going to go. I paid for gas and we go on a hunt. And he sits down and says, oh, I'm going to buy lunch because you got gas. I'm illegal?
Did you take him coyote hunting? Are you accepting monetary value?
I'm not guiding him. We're just going hunting as friends.
I'll find the NRS. We might have to call your brother on this, but we'll find the
NRS. I did not know that was a thing in Nevada. I thought
it is. It is definitely a thing in Nevada. You cannot accept money, anything of value in the state of Nevada for hunting.
When I went through that bear class, when I drew my bear tag, I can't remember it now, but there's California houndsmen that are no longer allowed to use their dogs on bears, so they solicit the people in Nevada that draw tags, mm-hmm. but they don't have Nevada guy. And they're
just as a friend.
That's then they said, you know, if you buy them fuel, if you
exactly,
you know, that's if you take them to Cabela's and buy them a Sitka coat, you're breaking the law. They did say that.
Yeah, it is. It's a law, and wow. I'll have you the number the next time we have a podcast that we're discussing.
That's absolutely crazy to me.
So I guess so. And I know you're not a lawyer, you're not a judge, but I would think it's like, you know, like I said, so a buddy's got a couple of hounds and he says, hey, if you get a mountain lion tag, I'll take you out, and you buy him gas because you could get him in trouble. That's crazy.
I mean, so how do you reckon, how do you guys as like say the,
well, I'm saying it's probably not going to happen.
The Sheep Foundation, whatever. How we donate a hunt. Right? Yeah. We donate a hunt for coyote hunting, which I got to call that guy back. He finally called me from a year ago.
I was going to say, he missed his opportunity.
No, we still got to take him now in September. Anywho, we donate a coyote hunt. Let's take this, for example, this guy, he won a hunt through donation. Right? We donated. Yeah. He won in an auction. We take him out in September as a donated hunt.
Yeah.
We're not guides and coyote hunting.
Right.
But he buys us lunch at Bruno's. We're both in trouble? How is that possible?
No, you're not. You're not. I mean, technically, of course, we're talking about coyotes. We're talking about a non-game animal. We're talking about something that's... great question. I'll look at the... I'm going to bring this law.
Like I said, it is. You're not a lawyer, but that's crazy to me.
I don't want to take a dang thing is what I would say.
Yeah, I was going to say we would just...
And the money that you did, that went to a 501c3. You didn't get anything out of the package. It wasn't a 50-50, a 60-40 or anything.
No, I understand that.
They got all the money.
I'm getting my gas paid for.
Just so you're legal, don't take anything.
Okay. I never would, but I'm saying if they insist on it,
you know, like I think Alex was alluding
to. That's crazy.
A judge is going to throw it out.
Right. This is to protect against
throw it out.
Someone that's guiding without a license, and they're going to stick
you
with it.
I doubt very seriously.
In our cases, of all the things we said, you would never have to worry about it.
Insurance reasons, you taking someone out, somebody gets hurt while you're doing it.
Right.
Yeah. It's kind of like going to Mexico for a breast job, right?
What?
Or a boob job.
Oh.
You go to an unlicensed doctor because it's cheaper down in Mexico for $1,000.
Right, right.
Okay, let's get back to what we were talking about. The $3
fee. $3 breast job.
Yeah, they got $3 thigh, leg, and breast combo down there.
$3 tacos.
So
that's expensive down there.
Maybe the wording. Let me put it this way. This was not brought by sportsmen. This was not brought by the department. This was brought by the anti-hunters. Okay.
This $3 fee. We're back on the $3 fee.
What we're doing.
Why would they have brought this up?
Because they don't want that's a pretty good pool of money. It's around $900,000 a year that's going to the projects, you know, okay. to the program. So they don't want those monies available to the department. So we got to get rid of. They got to get rid of it somehow. So well, you know what? Let's go to law and make it a law that. At first, this was a compromise, and I was part of it. I was there. I testified on every bill that was there last year about wildlife. This one a couple times, but the antis brought this, and it was to cripple the predator program because they wanted to get rid of it, just get rid of it. And then, you know, it was a compromise with Howard Watts, the assemblyman from Vegas that put it up. He says, okay, what if we gave them a choice? Predator, their money can go to predator management, or it can go to habitat, okay? So, well, yeah, but and we're going to drop the 80% lethal. It's 100% lethal now. The 80% rule's gone. So now it's 100%. So when it went to LCB, Legislative Council Bureau, then it got this additional language. But when we were discussing this, it was A, predator, B, habitat.
A, lethal predator.
Right.
B, habitat.
Lethal predator.
And where did it land?
Well, where it landed is just what...
So what it pretty much landed there. Was,
well, yeah, but except for, you know, the language that they have in there about the non-predatory animal. And, you know, if we do, and I don't want to get back to the horse thing, but dang it, you know, sportsmen, look at the millions of dollars that we put on the ground every year. It's amazing, right? We do. We put millions on the ground.
Yep.
And the department is that much better off because of volunteers on a 3-to-1 match, okay? The match is because we went and we helped with the project. That's the match. They only got to put up a quarter of it. Now they're going to get 3-to-1 on that.
Yeah.
And this is a lot of money. I can give you the numbers, but I'm not going to. But it floats a lot of programs for the Department of Wildlife. Okay? Well, with this $3 fee, $14,000 right off the top goes to Wildlife Services. Okay? What we used to call government trappers. $14,000 right off the top. Then administration takes about that much or more, up to 18%. So it leaves us with a pot. So sage-grouse has, since I've been following this, sage-grouse per unit has got the most per program. Okay. Now there's $100,000 in there in Project 37 and 47 to you know, statewide we can get rid of these lions. Okay. But sage grouse, it's $175,000 for poison eggs to get rid of ravens, which are federally protected. But we can only put so much out there. So that money is there, plus studies, plus we have one at the Department of Wildlife, one employee. His name is Pat Jackson. There's only one. Habitat cost of the department more than any other division. Okay? So we have been told in public by Endow, and I say we, I'm talking about people who attend meetings, especially Washoe Cab, and that the problem is not money for getting money for habitat projects. The problem is boots on the ground. They just don't have enough labor out there. There's plenty of funds that they can pull from.
To do habitat work?
To do habitat work.
But they don't have any volunteers or staff to do it.
Well, really, volunteers are today, it's changing a lot. I mean, I don't want to get into it because it's just a big, you know, I don't want to make a shit storm, but they would rather use private contractors to do this work. They're doing it most places. You go to look who's fencing in meadows. It's not Uncle Mel and Larry anymore and Steve and Jimmy and Steve and, you know, those guys. It's they pay contractors. And we're told it's a burden on the department because they have to have other personnel there. But yet they're going to make, well, I'll tell you the number. They make over $93 an hour over us. Every hour.
Contractor.
No, us, volunteers. Three to one match.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They make. So,
that's going in their coffers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the contractors, they're just paying it out there. You know, the job.
What they're saying is it's easier for us to show a fence contractor, hey, we want from here to here to here fenced versus having to go with Uncle Mel and his five buddies and their T-posts and BS and all that. We need here. You know, they just.
Yeah.
It's easier for them to pay than just to have.
And that's only on Habitat.
That's what they think.
And that's still going to happen with however much money if people do option B instead of option A.
Yeah, and they've already got enough money. They've said this in public. Now they're not going to be able to back out of it because there was too many of us that heard it. And just a couple of years ago, well, it's been five now or four, with the mule deer enhancement, that the Washoe Cab wanted to, because our biologist at that time was not using the heritage funds, so we wanted to get a project that he wanted, and we would apply for the money ourselves through the heritage program, okay, and then let him have his projects. So that's when we were told, hey, we don't need that. We have a lot of grants. I don't need your help. We don't need to go to the heritage program to get this. We have plenty of money in other grants. There's just not enough labor.
And that's,
we don't have the labor to get it.
That's on Habitat. What about now on when this new thing comes up, when they get X amount of dollars in the coffer for
Lethal predator.
Who does that go to?
It's going to go to what that says.
To lethal, but the department
is going to distribute it to what they think, non-predatory, you know, and research. What I think it should go to, okay, we spent on lethal. Why not use the second part of the money for research? Is it doing any good? It says it there for research, right, of non-predatory animals.
But what he's asking is, where's the money going to go? Who's the predator control people? Is it just the trappers? Or are they going to hire people to?
No. Yeah, are they going to get a contract like they do for fencing? Are they going to? Could I go there and say, hey,
wildlife
I have
services?
That's it. That's a
no. Then there's a private contractor.
Because that's federal going to take care of a state problem.
Right.
So can I start a business and go petition the division and go, hey, I want to get part of that money to go take care of a predator problem because I know.
Or would they do a mountain lion bounty? Would they do a coyote bounty?
What we were told, you'd have to work under, but it's on lions. I'm unaware of any private contractors for coyotes right now. So it's going to be on lions. And you're going to have to work under the one and only that has the contract with the department for problem lions.
But that's only for problem lions, not proactively going out and getting them?
You're going to have problem lions everywhere. I mean, you know, a biologist comes in and says, look, here, this, I got three, you know, most of our sheep today that we transplant have collars, right?
Isn't every lion
so we know when one goes down. So sends out that mortality signal. We go in, okay, a lion killed it. So now it's happening in 022 with deer. They send a lion guy out there to get it, you know, and it's usually wildlife services. Wildlife services can't work in wilderness study areas or wilderness areas.
Are they trapping or what are they doing to get lions?
Mostly they use three. They use footholds, they use snares, and they use hounds and nighttime. So, you know, they have those tools available to them where you and I wouldn't.
That's what I was just going to say. So why is it a hindrance upon me if I'm a trapper and there is now this fund and allowing the state or private contractor to go use different means than I could? If they're trying to get rid of the predators, why is a, this is maybe even a whole other issue, why is there a deal against trapping mountain lions?
It's not an approved method of take.
It is if you're getting paid for it from the government.
Well, that would be a totally different story. if you went to work underneath this private contractor, okay, then you could use that that you could use it because now you're contracted. So it's not just going to be hounds.
What's holding people? What's holding the Trappers Association to going after that?
We don't
that?
Want no. it. We do not.
Okay,
want
Okay, so
fight.
What you don't want the fight?
No, we don't want it. So if the sports will want to do it, fine, let them do it.
To go after,
but we're fine right where we're at, guys. We're fine right where we're at.
You just don't want the fight because they might come after trapping.
Well, they're going to anyhow.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, why do I want to feel
stay off the radar?
Feel on a fire.
Yeah, but in my mind, if the government is allowed to do it to get rid of them. Or a problem? Why? If I wanted to go,
if
trapper,
it's good enough for the government, you know, what, government should yeah, be good
but,
enough for its
you know,
citizens.
Buddy, what law is not like that? You and I can't fly a helicopter. You know, in a helicopter, we can't fly in a plane. If we do it, we hold a tag and a 30. See, we got to turn it in, right? I mean, we can't put trail cameras up. There's just lots of.
We don't have to take the COVID shot. we don't have to. We don't. We get fake COVID shots, but we get full insurance for the rest of our life.
That's something that we have to. So, but we got to educate people.
I want to know, okay, but do you feel like those resources are going to get put to good? I agree. You have one contractor. Say that thing gets $500,000.
Which thing?
The predator, the lethal predator. That $500,000 is going to get put to good use by one single person?
Now, wait a minute. Okay, you're not grasping what I'm telling you. There's only one predator person that does this. At the Department of Wildlife that administers this, okay? So you got one guy in predators, you got 17 big game biologists in the state, you got 35 in the law enforcement plus, you know, so each one of those divisions. But it's only one guy that works on predators at the department.
That's what he's saying is, where's this money going to go?
$3
where's the lethal?
I'm going to check $3. And so is
it's going to go the same place it's always been going.
Exactly. So that one guy has control of that coffer?
That and four committees on the commission.
And there's plenty being done, or there's plenty. They need money to do more lethal predator control, and we have the labor to do it is what we're asking you.
Wildlife Services, who's a government with the USDA.
Yeah. But that's federal government, not state.
But that's who they hire. Okay,
but you're saying the money will get put to good use. They have plenty of manpower to take care of it. What we're saying is we give our money to this lethal predator thing, is it going to get put to good use? They have the means to use it. They need the money. This is where it should go.
Is that one guy going to
however.
Here, I'm going to put 20 minions to go kill mountain lions and coyotes. Or is it going to be 17% to buy gas, you know, to administration, to have a council meeting, to do the bureaucracy? Or is that $3 fee going to go to the ground and killing predators?
Absolutely not. The entire $3 fee is not going to. His wages are taken out.
Sure.
That $3 fee.
Okay, whatever. He
has five cars that are taken out.
Sure. Yes, you're going to have hard costs like that, yes.
Yeah,
but after those hard costs, are the monies going to go to people to kill?
That's the intent of that bill.
Okay.
But it's not just about coyotes and mountain lions. You're still protecting sage grouse. Okay.
So okay, what percentage you can play? Does that one guy get to go, okay, now $1.75 of this is going to go to sage grouse and protection or whatever it is?
Himself
and for and
he writes it up, and then it's approved by the commission. It goes into several different committees that look at this. It's the most regulated. It is the most regulated activity that is done at Endow. It has to be approved four times.
This $3 thing?
Yes, sir. The predator projects are approved four times.
Oh my God!
So now, when we do what I'm saying, why I say it's so restrictive? What do we do with quotas? We set the quota. The commission says, okay, we can have 257 lion tags. It's done. But now if he's going to do a project, it's got to be approved by different committees and then by the full commission.
And that is that on top of the 257? His problem mountain lions, this deal?
No, no lions that are taken by Wildlife Services are part of the quota.
Yes. My question, final question is, A says, developing and implementing an annual program for the lethal removal of predatory wildlife.
That's what they're doing now.
How much of the $3 is going to go to the developing and implementing? No, or the developing versus the implementing?
Who knows?
I
because
would have to.
The implementing is more important than the developing. We know what to do. We have to kill them. So there's no development there.
Yeah, but we have to have a reason. And we have to prove that reason.
I mean, isn't the reason already proven?
Here's the thing. They're going to take your $3. You want it directed towards lethal predator control versus habitat. The bureaucracy of government could be argued on this podcast. Of the $3, 75 cents is going to bullshit. Another $1.25 is going to some more bullshit. Your $3 is coming out no matter what. We need it aimed at lethal predator control.
You know, to be honest with you, I think I have it right out my truck, the last presentation that was made on it, you know, the draft copies of it. I can show you those numbers. I think it is in the floorboard of my truck, but how much of it actually hits the ground? I would like to see a whole bunch more hit the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we're all clear, it's not Uncle Mel's fault that this money's not, you know.
And this is we'll know. We'll have some data within a year because this is a new program, right? This is the first time that
this is the first time ever.
We'll see. I mean, we're all throwing out.
We're going to know in June. We're going to know in June, guys, how many guys checked the top boxes, who checked the bottom one.
Right.
To end this and to piggyback off of last week's horse roundup deal and this, I think the two biggest things threatening wildlife in Nevada are predators and horses. The horses are going to take care of habitat. And so we need to figure out a way to get rid of horses. And if that's by lawsuit from you, me, as a group of sportsmen, whoever's going to do that, that's got to happen because that's the only way of fighting back. Like we talked earlier, we got to get to the other side of the pendulum instead of staying in the middle. Because right now we're just fighting AMLs, like 750, because we're not meeting what the act says anyway. So we got to get aggressive and bring the non-happening to action. So that is going to take care of restoration.
That will help.
Of our ground.
That will definitely help.
And predator management. I wish this $3 specifically said that
if we raise $900,000, we're gonna chop it up and send a bunch of dudes out into the desert.
Put $100 bounty on every coyote, on every whatever, and or change the terminology. I don't even know how that would even start. How do we change the terminology of a horse, changing it to a predatory animal? Right. Because they kill the population. They do more damage than. Anyway, so we need to do that.
Do you sometimes feel like all this stuff's like an uphill battle with?
Absolutely.
I mean, it really, it does. Absolutely. It does. Yeah, 100%. And it seems very daunting when you talk about I specifically think the wild horses. Well, and you know, how long have you been doing this? 25 years?
Longer than that, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, and the sad reality is you're probably not going to see it change towards the good.
No.
It's going to change towards the bad. The fact that we have 50,000 wild horses and burros in Nevada, and what's our number supposed to be, 12,000 or something?
12, yeah, a little over 12,000.
We have more than every state that has wild horses in the United States, we have more than all of them combined.
But we got to explain something to Alex because he was paying hooky on us, right? You know? But, okay, so that count does not include this year's foals.
Yeah, that's 20% more.
Sure, it's even worse than I think it is.
Yeah, it is.
It's better than what I think it is. It's worse than what I think it is.
It's worse. Now, I'm going to give you this before we sign off.
No, you're good.
And it's going to be quick. But if someone doesn't believe that predator management works, look back in the 30s when Teddy Roosevelt took a trip down to the Strip and he seen the greatest mule deer that he'd ever seen. And they killed a lot of coyotes, man. It didn't take very long. Mule deer were starving to death. Starving to death because there wasn't enough feed. We call it highlining, juniper highlining, and that's what the deer were forced to eat. Utah, Colorado, Wyoming, Arizona, these deer had nothing, or, you know, the strip is where it was, but those states experienced the highlining too of junipers, and that's what they call it. You go look to see, and as high as a deer could get, he was highlining juniper. He's eating it. You know, if you don't believe it works, read that study. If you want to see another one that's happened right here in the state of Nevada, I don't remember the project. I think it was project number 14 for the $3 fee is what did this. And it was in the Granite Mountains in 014. It ran for 9 years. Every single year, there were more deer and there were more tags getting let out. Now, after 9 years, it was stopped. We had 1,850 deer in the Granites. We now have 250 is the population.
Because they stopped so doing the predator?
If someone wants to tell you it doesn't work, say, well, then explain to me what happened in 014. Explain to me what happened in the strip when the mule deer were highlining junipers because that was all that was left to eat because there were so damn many of them. Okay, there's other ones. If it doesn't work, why is it a policy that we remove lions before we transplant bighorn sheep in there? Like we talked about, or talked about early on. So there is proof for this stuff. Now I'm going to put this out there because it's going to be brought up. The reason why they said the 014 program project was a failure was because we were looking for a higher percentage of fawns. Okay? It was stuck about that 20%. So we go out and look. Well, okay, and the percentage supposedly didn't rise. But we can all count. How did we go from the deer that were there before the project started and what we had at the end? How did we increase every year? My explanation for that is we were missing counts. You know, we were counting our fawns wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And
which are probably the hardest ones to count.
Yeah. So, you know, the percentage might have been the same, but what's 20% of 100? 20.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you have 300 of those, what's 20% of 300? 60. So how fast is it going to go up? Now, just a couple years, that fawn that was born a couple years ago, she's going to be putting them out. First year does usually have one fawn. After that, it's generally twins. Okay? So after a couple, 3 years, she's putting two on the ground. All right? And you say, oh, my God, Mel, you were just saying, why did you say your number 50, 60 fawns per 100 does? We can grow it at 40. Why did you say, you know, what happened? You should be asking me, Uncle Mel, what's happening to the rest of those fawns? If the majority of the does out there are putting two fawns on the ground, provided the habitat's there, blah, blah, blah. I mean, what's happening to the other ones? What's happening to the other 140 fawns?
They're getting shit out.
Where are they going?
They're getting shit out.
Okay. Where are they going? They're going somewhere.
Yeah.
Because if we could grow them at, you know, 45, 38 per 100 does, if we could have a growing population, my God, what are we doing to save the other 140 of them?
Mm-hmm.
They're getting eaten.
They're getting eaten.
They might die of something, but in the end, they're getting eaten.
All right, folks. We can talk about this.
Now that your blood pressure's up.
Blood pressure. We need a $3 fee to kill horses. That's what we need. For every deer tag that you get, you should get two.
We need a purge day in Nevada.
Two horse tags.
Every person that wants to can go out and shoot one horse and leave it lay.
Don't do that. It's illegal.
No, I'm saying that's what we should have.
Yeah.
We need the $3 fee to go to lethal.
No, I'm saying another $3. I would proudly give another $3 to get two horse tags. Proudly. Because that would give more opportunity to sportsmen because the deer population would grow. Anywho,
One other thing before we sign off.
Your last thing you said was going to be short was 13 minutes ago.
It just popped back in my mind. The reason why I like to hunt lions, I love eating them, guys. I would rather eat a mountain lion
than
a
mule deer. I digress.
That's BS. Get one for the mount.
That's the truth.
I digress.
Oh, you can have mine if I'll share a meal
all,
with man. You.
I'll take it all.
All right. Get the reason we wanted to do this today is get involved, know where your money's going, and put some effort to it, because if not, your hunting is going away.
And Uncle Mel needs help. Get involved.
Yes.
Thanks, Alex.
Get involved.
Thanks.
See you.
Thanks, Uncle
See
Mel.
See you, guys.